The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Onyx Hunt. Bringing you the best GPS mapping software directly to your smartphone or desktop, Onyx offers you the ability to see property boundaries, mark waypoints, track your location, and so much more. Visit onyxmaps.com or you can download it directly from your app store today. Save 20% off of your purchase by using the code NATION20 at checkout. That's capital N, nation, followed by the number 20.
Welcome back to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And on this episode, we are talking all about turkey. And my guest today is, he's a returning guest. His name is Billy Pryor. And Billy is probably most known for his fishing content here on the Iowa Sportsman. But he also loves to turkey hunt. And that's what we are BSing about today. We talk about scouting. We talk about weather. We talk about strategy. We talk about decoys. We talk about guns and bows and blinds. And really, it's just a high level, general, a little bit of everything conversation about turkey hunting. And I'm excited. I know that with this whole quarantine thing that we got going down, everybody is anxious to get out and go start hunting and fishing. And turkey hunting is the best thing that you can do right now. I am so jacked to get out and start calling and hear that first gobble of the year. And what I'm really excited about is this is going to be my daughter's first year of tagging along with me. She's not old enough to balance a gun and shoot a gun yet. However, she's going to come along with me. And the goal is to get a tom close enough to where she can see it strut. Or I really want to, have her hear a gobble for the first time. And the closer, the better, because I know even when I was young, the first gobble I heard blew my socks off. And so that's the goal for this spring. Really good episode. It's nothing groundbreaking, because I don't feel like turkey hunting. Like I say in the episode, there's times someone who has never been turkey hunting before can walk in the timber and shoot a turkey. And then there's guys like me who have been hunting turkey for almost 20 years now and can struggle at times. So very interesting conversation. I'm not going to waste any of your time in the intro. Let's get into today's episode with Billy Pryor. All right, on the phone with me now, Mr. Billy Pryor. Billy, how we doing, man?
In light of everything that's going on, I'm all right. Just getting prepared for turkey season and, hoping things stay as good as they are right now.
Yeah. Have you been out and done any fishing recently?
I tried to hit the river a couple of times. It was kind of ice out at first. Had a couple of small hits, a couple of small walleye, and then the river around here, the Raccoon River, has risen quite a bit, so haven't had much action, so just kind of waiting that out a little bit.
Yeah. When it comes, real quick, I know we're going to be talking about turkey today, but real quick, springtime fishing, what are you most excited for as far as getting your boat back on open water?
I just want to be back on the open water, really. Mm-hmm. Between all this, quarantining and whatnot, and after the ice was on the water, and I'm not much of an ice fisherman, I just want to get out. I want to get a crankbait out in the water. I want to feel the fight of a largemouth or a smallmouth again instead of these small panfish. I'm waiting for a fight.
Panfish are fun, but there comes a time where you got to put the women and children to bed and go rip some lips, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I can't wait till it just warms up just a little bit more to where the kids don't get cold and get out and just go on hikes. And we were outside a lot today, but man, I mean, this whole cabin fever and all the other neighbor kids are outside and all the parents are like in the middle saying, no, you can't go over and play with them and stuff. I think if I wasn't an outdoorsman, I don't know how I would be handling this, because I know there's a lot of people who are just sitting inside. They're not going. But luckily for us, we got fishing and we got turkey hunting coming up pretty fast.
Exactly.
All right. So turkey hunting, do you do any type of pregame, like preseason scouting when when turkey hunting is like what now, 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away?
Right. Scouting is one of my favorite things. Basically what I do when it comes to scouting for turkeys is I think of turkey season as when shed hunting season starts. If you can see the ground, that's when I start getting out. I start, I'm looking for sheds while I'm walking around, and I'm looking for turkey tracks. I'm looking, in the sunrise, listening for gobbles in the distance, checking my normal areas that I like to hunt, seeing if they're in the same roosts. And a lot of times, if you're on good private land, and even a lot of times on public land, they're going to stick to a lot of the same roosts because they have a habit of what they like. So I like to see, how many we've got this year coming down from the roosting areas, or if they're coming from across the river this year, this springtime and shed season is what I always call it. I don't even refer it to it as spring anymore, is turkey time. So definitely got to get out and scout.
Gotcha. So when you go out and you're going and you're looking for shed antlers, but what are you looking for from a turkey standpoint?
So one of the first things I do, if it's sunrise or right around that time, I listen for gobbles from the roost. That's my telltale sign. That's where you'll hear them most, especially as the weather's getting warmer. They're going to get louder and louder and louder. Mating for them is right around the corner, so they're ready to impress a hen. So when I get out and about, first I sit in the truck. I have the windows down or sit by the truck, and I listen. Once the light comes up, I'm glassing. I want to see if they're out in the field. They're looking for grains. They're looking for bugs. Now that it's getting warmer, bugs are starting to come out. So they're going to start getting more active too. And that's the most basics of scouting is listen and look. That'll tell you the most information you need.
Right. So are turkeys going crazy in the trees? Like, for me, I'll be completely honest. I've never been much of a preseason scouter when it comes to turkeys. I have been more of a show up in the woods, just call and find them and go get them type of guy. Right. Are they gobbling right now, end of March timeframe?
I find that it all depends, not specifically on calendar dates. It all depends on the weather.
Okay.
If it's doing like it is now and it's getting warmer and warmer, you're going outside at 5:30 in the morning and you're getting a 45 to 50 degree temperature, you get out in the woods where you think the turkeys are and you hit a couple of quick calls right at sunrise, just some yelps from a hen, the gobblers will respond.
Okay. And when have you noticed over the years of doing this, out scouting, just spending time out in the woods before the season starts, when is there a noticeable ramp up in calling or the turkeys gobbling? Have you noticed a specific time frame where it really starts to ramp up?
Again, weather dependent. Definitely say, it needs to be that wet, nasty, warm season, but it's usually about the last 2 weeks of March is when it'll start picking up. That's when I see the most action of, I guess, the most dramatic change from quiet to, noisy mornings. Right. And I always focus on mornings because mornings to me seem to be the most active.
Right. Yeah. So let's say you go out, you plan to scout. All right. And you're listening and you don't see anything or you're not hearing anything. You glass and maybe you're not glassing up the birds that you want. Is there a third step? Is there something you're going and doing to actively find them as far as scouting is concerned?
Definitely focus on time frames. Morning times at sunrise, they're going to come down from their roosts. And as that temperature changes, the bugs start moving. When the day warms up, the bugs will start moving. So they're going to feed. So definitely look at field edges, grass edges. That's where your bugs are going to be usually the most. And if they're not right in that area, just a couple of cuts or yelps from a slate call or a diaphragm mouth call, it can tend to kind of wake them up and get their answer. Even if they're not ready to mate yet, they may fire back just as a, hey, I'm here as well.
Yeah. So when you're doing your calling then, to see if there's anything out there responding, are you just waiting to hear a response and then calling it quits? So it's like a checkbox, right? You're like, okay, well, I've heard them. Check. I know they're in here. I'm going to leave them alone. Or are you being more aggressive and trying to get them to come closer to you?
When it comes to scouting, the earlier it is, in my opinion, basically, if you can get an answer and that's really about it, you're trying real hard. You know, you wait 15 minutes between a couple calls just to try to see if you can get an answer. And it was kind of a hard ordeal to get them to answer, you know, leave it alone after that. If they're firing back every single time you hit a call, mess with them a little bit and bring them out. The thing I like about turkeys is it's a forgiving hunt. If you do get busted, you know, you can come back that evening. I've walked up on a group of turkeys before coming up over the hill. Didn't think they'd be there. Scared away, you know, 15 of them, give or take. And think to myself, great, I'm screwed. Come back 2 hours later, and there they all are again. So, I mean, they're a hard creature to hunt, but at the same time, they're not the brightest. So.
Yeah. They have a small brain, right?
And right, I think, right.
And that's probably part of the reason. A small brain with extremely good eyes, right?
Right. Yeah. They basically say if a turkey could smell, you'd never kill one.
Yeah.
But thankfully, since they can't smell you, they don't realize you're there. They can see and hear you, but they don't smell you. And then if you do spook them, they don't remember a couple hours later. So.
Yeah. So when you go out and you're trying to, you know, listen, you've done your scouting, you're trying to go out, season gets here and you're trying to go out and kill one. Are you a bow guy or are you a gun guy for turkey season?
I actually do both.
Okay.
I would say thrill wise, I've never had more of a thrill than shooting a turkey with a bow, you know, versus a gun. Yeah. A gun, it's great. It just seems like a simple kill for the most part. But that the bow, it's just, you got to get such a great shot placement and as good as they can see, you know, you got to wait till they turn and face away from you to draw back. It just adds in a little bit of an extra excitement to it.
Right. Right. So then, so you do a little bit of both. What kind of hunter are you? Are you a, let's go get in a ground blind and try to get them to come to you guy, or are you a run and gun, you know, go get them guy?
Predominantly, I would say I'm a ground blind guy. I like to set up a ground blind. And the thing I love about turkeys is you can set up a ground blind in the middle of a field. They're coming to the decoys. They don't care about your blind.
Yeah, that's right.
As long as they don't see you moving. So I would definitely say I'm a ground blind guy. But if I'm using a shotgun, I do like the run and gun just because it's easier to be mobile. You know, if you hear them and they're just hung up for hours on the other side of the woods, you can make it over there and still, you know, and call them in. So
yeah,
a little of both, but predominantly ground blind.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would have to say that I'm a ground blind guy when I have company with me, like my wife, cause she likes to go out. She is not necessarily a run and gun, go get them type person. I am a run and gun type, you know, type guy. So, and I'll be honest, I've tried shooting a turkey with a bow before. I just didn't work out. I don't get the time. I guess I don't dedicate a lot of time towards turkey season because I spend so much time chasing deer and going out west and stuff. So for me, turkey season is, well, I'll dedicate however many days are in a season and then that's about it. Right. No, you know, nothing too crazy, but when it's time, I like to just go get them. And that's why I like to use a gun because, you know, you can be mobile with a gun, but, and then you can try to, you know, get in front of them or whatever and call them in and you don't have to draw a bow back at the end when they finally do get close. You know what I mean? I've seen people do it, but I guess I like to be aggressive and I don't necessarily have the patience for that.
Right. And see, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum there.
Yeah.
I put in enough time in deer season where I scout and know where the deer are. I put up a stand and I sit in the stand at. That's really about it. I mean, I don't do a whole lot during deer season, mainly due to the fact that I'm just a public land hunter anyhow.
Yeah.
But I've got private land for turkey season, and I mean, I put in a lot of work for it because I've experienced so many more rushes during turkey season just because it's always something different. I've had turkeys brush up against my ground blind walking by. I could have grabbed it. And I've shot turkeys at 5 feet and I've shot turkeys at 25 yards. Yeah. So it's just always something different.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about scenarios now, because I feel like, you know, when we're talking about deer hunting strategy, or, you know, you've been on the podcast before and we talk about different fishing strategies, right? Let's talk about these strategies and these scenarios with turkey hunting, because I feel like a guy can walk into the woods and who has never turkey hunted before, make some squeaky noises on some metal, and a Tom will come in and he can shoot him and he'll say, geez, man, this was easy. And then you can have a guy who is he's senior, he's been hunting for 60 years and he's killed, you know, 50 turkeys. And then there's years where he could get hung up and not kill a bird. Right. So they can, I feel like turkeys can make an experienced hunter look real dumb sometimes. So when it comes to, you know, these scenarios here, I want to throw one out to you and I want to hear your answer on it. So you're in your ground blind, right? And you start to call and the Tom starts to respond to you, but he's hung up. You can't see him. You can't see him, but he's gobbling in the roost, and maybe you can see him pitch down, maybe you can't, but then he shuts off. How do you approach that scenario?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways. There's what I call the standard way, and that's if he shuts down, you shut down. You don't want to overcall. You don't want to scare him away. So, you know, if he's responding, I fire back right away. But if he starts to slow down or he starts to calm down, I also try to calm down a little bit just so I don't seem too aggressive and spook him. I'll even go as far as, and maybe I'm crazy for doing this, but if I'm like using a mouth diaphragm call, I will face the opposite direction and make, you know, try to think, okay, maybe he's going to think that this hen is walking away from him. And that's going to tell him that he's lost his chance. So it'll give him that extra boost to come towards me.
Right.
So there's your calling tactics of, you know, slow down a little bit. Just don't be too aggressive. But I've also gone as far as, all right, it's been 30 minutes and he was last heard over here. Let's move. Yeah. And I've gotten up and I've crawled. I've walked, I've ran. And it's done me good and it's done me wrong. I busted myself because I thought, okay, he's got to be long gone. He walked 5 feet around the ridge and as soon as you stand up, there he is. It's like, oh my God, he was right there.
So yeah, we've all been there before. Now, when you move, are you taking your ground blind with you, or are you just at that point out of your ground blind making strategic moves?
A little of both. I mean, if I can see that he just walked up over that ridge, a quarter mile away, I might bring my blind with me. Especially if I have another person with me, like if my daughter hunts with me, I can say, hey, keep the ground blind set up. And since it's not windy, we're just going to basically pick it up and carry it with us. But there's been plenty of times where I've been alone, sneak out and I grab the feeding hen that I have set up in front of the blind and crawl to the next spot and keep an eye out and set it up, lean against a tree and try again.
Got ya. All right. So do you take that same approach with, let's say, something similar happens, but now you can see the Tom, he's not within shooting range, but he's with a hen, you know, we call that being henned up. How does your approach change if you see a Tom, and maybe even if he is responding to you? Because I know a lot of times Tom will still gobble and gobble pretty aggressively, even though he's with hens and he doesn't plan on leaving them. How do you go after that bird?
So basically when that happens, what I do is all my calls that I'm normally using when I'm hunting, it's hey, I'm over here, kind of a locator call, or hey, I'm ready to mate. You know, I'm a hen that's kind of lonely. It gets his attention. When I see him with a hen and I was like, I want that Tom, what I will do is I will start making more aggressive calls towards the hen. Basically, I'm trying to call the hen in at this point, and I'm saying, this is my territory, and getting very aggressive with, like, yelps and cuts.
Okay.
So she wants to come in now and say, hey, no, not at all. This is my territory. And he's just going to follow her in because he's locked in on her. And that gives me my opportunity.
Okay. All right. That's a good point. All right. So it's almost like a distraction for the tom.
Right.
Okay. Cool. All right. So what about what are you doing on a day where there's nothing happening? You don't hear any gobbles. Let's say, for example, you go out and you roost a bird the night before. So maybe you know they're in there, but they're not responding at all. You know they're in there somewhere, but they're not responding. How do you approach one of those?
Well, this is where I'm not going to look wonderful as a hunter, because what I do is I stick to my guns. I know what I'm doing. I'm educated. I'm going to make a call every 15 to 25 minutes. Don't want to be too aggressive. I've got my decoys up. Everything's perfect for about an hour.
Yeah.
Now I've spent so much time on my phone, I've never even looked up.
Yeah.
So I'm looking around every now and then. And where most people are like, well, let's just wait it out. They're out here. I know they are. I'm the guy that says, let's run a gun. Let's find a new bird. Let's move over here. Yeah. Let's try this. Let's go home. Let's come back this afternoon. So I do get impatient, especially when it comes to turkey hunting, because I'm used to it going well, even if it's going bad. You know, that's the difference between turkey hunting and deer hunting, in my opinion, is that even when it's going bad, it's well, because you're hearing them in the distance. You're seeing them in the distance. Where deer hunting, you know, you never know. Like, they could be all around you and you never see them. They're so elusive.
Yeah.
So I tend to move a lot, and I think I mess myself up more than I help myself if I'm not seeing a bird.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I was talking to a guy earlier today, and I asked him a similar question. I said, man, what do you do when the turkeys aren't responding? He goes, oh, that's easy. I go fishing.
And, you know, me and my buddy, when we turkey hunt together, if we sit a morning that is bad, we hunt right by the river. So yeah. We always have our fishing gear with us, and turkey season's walleye season. So, yeah. And smallmouth season. So we hit that.
Yeah. I tell you, I've had some days in the turkey woods that are just like, man, are there any turkey here at all? Period. And it's, you know, it's a day that, you know, maybe the day before they were going bananas, and then it's the same exact day, and then they're dead. They're just quiet. And I don't know, that blows my mind how, I don't know, antsy they are. Like,
right. And maybe that goes back to the small brain thing. I don't know. I think the only thing that their brain has going on is, if I hear something, I got to run away from it. I have to mate. I have to eat.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they know to do the same thing every day or the same location every day.
Yeah. It's more of a binary thought process where if it's danger, I run from it. If it's a hen during this time frame, I want to breed it. And then the rest of the time, I'm just, you know, fly down, eat, fly back up, and just do that for my whole life. Three decisions,
exactly.
Really. So let's talk about your decoy strategy. Do you use decoys every single time you go out?
I have tried hunting without decoys, just calling them into the sound of a diaphragm or a slate call.
Yeah.
And I don't have much luck with it. I've brought them in a couple of times, you know, a hen here or a jake there, but nothing great. My best luck that I've ever had is always a 2-3 decoy setup.
Okay. What's the ratio there?
So, basically, if I've got more aggressive toms that want to own the area, and you can tell that just by going out and experiencing the hunt, you know, if you see toms come rushing in, or if you see toms fighting out in the field, or satellite jakes rotating, you know, and that's just a couple of jakes that stay with each other and they circle their area constantly. If you see something like that could be aggressive, I love putting out just a simple feeding or breeding hen on the ground, and then coming up and approaching behind her a smaller jake.
Yeah.
that just they look at him like, hey, I can beat you up, and that usually draws in the aggressive ones.
Yeah. Are they postured in a certain way other than the Jake behind? Is the hen laying down like it's getting ready to breed? Is the other turkey like in kind of any form of strut, or is it just all docile?
So I've got a few different decoys. If you know you've got a very mature tom in the area, I do have a tom decoy that's got a full strut, and that takes a mature, strong tom to come in.
Yeah.
Because it does scare off a lot of the other birds. But if you bring in a bird with that, you're bringing in a good bird.
Yeah.
So that's one option. The Jake that I have, I love using, is just a docile. It's almost like he is just kind of looking in going, hey, what's this? His head's up, tail's down. And then I have three different hens. One's a breeding hen. She lays flat on the ground. One's a feeding hen. She's got her face down to the ground like she's pecking for bugs or seeds. And one's a lookout hen. She's got her head up. And I love leaving her kind of loose on her little post, so that way if any wind comes in, she kind of swings back and forth and it looks like she's looking around. So, and my most common setup is usually the feeding hen. Like she's down because she's low enough that it could resemble a breeding hen. And then that docile Jake about 4 yards behind her. And that's all about 15 yards in front of me.
Gotcha. Yeah. My decoy strategy is roughly the same. I don't give turkeys too much credit, in that brain category. I have to tell you a quick story. All right. I forget what year it was, maybe 2008 or 9 or 10 or something like that. But my buddy decided he wanted to go turkey hunting. He had never been turkey hunting before. He was only a deer hunter. And so we go out and he's like, dude, do I need a decoy? I'm like, yeah, it probably helps to bring him in. He's like, I don't have one. So he's driving to the store, or no, he was mowing. I think that year it was a little warmer, and he was mowing his ditch, and he found an old hen turkey decoy, had an ant's nest in it. It was like it had already been hit by a mower before, and he put some tape on it, and that is what we used to call in this tom. Now he shoots it with his bow, and it was, and you know, we didn't know what we had shot at that point. It's all on video, but he shoots it with a bow and he goes and gets it, and we're cleaning it, and he takes a picture of, there's like, I don't know, 7 beards on this thing. And
wow.
Yeah. Well, long story short, we take it to Missouri to an official scorer who weighs it, measures it up, and it's the world record atypical turkey with a bow. Atypical meaning multiple beards, right? So there's all these beard calculations, and then the spur calculation and the weight calculation. And this dude, first turkey he ever shot with a bow, is a world record turkey. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And the reason I'm telling this story is because the decoy that we had sitting out, we put a arrow in the ground, slid the decoy on top of the arrow, and it was just this beat up, you know, it didn't look real at all. It was basically a silhouette, which tells me that you probably don't need the most realistic turkey decoy to bring them in.
Right. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, does that, with him, does that make him never need to hunt again because it's impossible to beat that? Or is he hooked and wants to continue turkey hunting forever now?
Yeah, I don't know. when it happened, he was, at the time, he was a really big, he's since passed, but he had a really big, passionate deer hunter, and turkey was always kind of a, you know, hey, let's just go out and kill some turkeys type of deal. And, but what it did was it got him excited to go hunt, continue to hunt turkeys every year. Right. He still went out.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. So he got this thing fully mounted. Right. I don't know about you, but when I shoot a turkey, I have stacks I have stacks of fans on my deep freeze out in the garage. And it's like, I don't need any more fans, right? It's not like a deer head where if I shoot a big deer, I'm going to mount it and it's going on my wall. I'll find wall space for that.
Absolutely.
But there's only so many places to put a turkey or a turkey fan, right? It's to the point where now they're hanging in my garage. Right.
That's what I told my daughter that last year. I do not need another fan.
Absolutely. So are there times where you are taking the decoys down because you think it's going to help?
If you know it's a very populated area, if you know that they feed in the same spot every day, like let's say it's your farm and you see them every morning and you have for months or years or whatever it may be, there's no necessary reason to put up a decoy. You just need to tuck yourself in and let their patterns do the work for you.
Yeah.
In all reality, you may actually spook them. Hey, new bird, why is that here? So, I mean, it definitely, if you know that it's going to be there, you watched it come down from the rooster every day, it feeds in the same spot, the group or the hen or the tom, whatever it may be, you can just sit and wait and just let that play out.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you, I'll share my strategy here. Definitely if I'm hunting a wide open field, right, where I'm tucked into a field edge, I'm using decoys, you know, cause I want them to come see. Now, if I'm ever on a run and gun in the timber, I typically don't use decoys. If I do, I'll actually set the decoys back further than me and I'll hunt in front of them. So when I call, their attention, it goes beyond me, past me, if that makes sense.
Right,
and
right.
I've had that. I feel like that has worked a couple times to where it sounds closer than what it's sounding closer than what they see. So it's almost tricking them into wanting to get a little closer to investigate. So then, you know, obviously they're getting closer, but you know, if I'm in a wide open field, I'm doing a similar, you know, Jake hen decoy setup. And in the timber, I may set them up. If it's thick, I probably don't use a decoy at all. Just try to get them, you know, come in close enough and do the old neck extension where they kind of look up over the leaves, the low brush just enough to put some lead in their face. And, you know, that's my decoy strategy. Now, has this ever worked for you, this strategy here? Because I've tried it several times and it may, you know, in my 15 years, 20 years of turkey hunting, it's probably only worked just a handful of times. And that is the call, they get hung up, you back up maybe 50, 100 yards, call again and get them interested in there, and then maybe even sneak forward a little bit more to get them to come in closer.
That has actually worked for me one time on accident, and I didn't mean to do it. Didn't realize I was doing it. What my buddy and I were sitting in the ground blind together, and we watched the turkeys. We're up on top of a hill. We watched the turkeys come in on the fence line. And we were on the right side of the fence knowing that they were going to follow that side. And we watched them down at the bottom of the hill. And they just stayed down there feeding, would not come into our calls. Just almost like they're hung up. But we could see them. So while we were glassing them, making calls and stuff, they wouldn't even look. Like they didn't care at all. I don't even know if you want to call that hung up as much as not interested.
Right.
And they made it probably 20 yards over into the woods, couldn't see them. We decided, well, they're at the bottom of the hill. Let's go to the bottom of the hill. We didn't move our blind 50 yards and made the calls, and they loved it. The only difference in the calls was when we were up top, I was using my slate call or my diaphragm call, got to the bottom of the hill and changed it up to a slate call. I said, oh, she, you know, this one sounds a little older, raspier. I don't know if it was the movement. I don't know if it was the call. But they absolutely loved it and came running right in. So nothing that was a shooter on that point in time, but it just kind of surprised me. And we've talked about that quite a few different times. You know, what was it, the move? Was it the calls? And I don't know. We're still kind of confused to this day, but I think movement could help.
Yeah.
And I would say if you think it does, I recommend bringing two different styles of calls, and maybe they'll think you're a different turkey.
Yeah. So that's my problem, man. I'll be honest with you. I am an overcaller. I call and I call, nothing responds, move, call and call and call. I don't even wait 15 minutes. I'm ripping it. I let everything know that I am there, right? I am, and it's probably, and to be honest, it's probably hurt me more than it's ever helped me. But, right. But I am horrible, and I know it just takes practice, but I'm almost like at this point, I don't want to practice mouth calls. I'm a slate guy or a box call guy. I mean, I've done it. I've made it work the last 20 years, but I just don't ever dedicate the time to using a diaphragm call. Do you think that there is an advantage, or I guess what I'm asking is, tell me if I'm wrong or not for thinking that way.
In my opinion, when it comes to calls, the number one most important thing is do the call you're good at, because a sour call won't get you anything.
Yeah.
So if you can do a diaphragm, do that. If you do a slate, do that. If you do a box, do that. That's the reason you didn't hear me talk about box calls, is because when I do that, it sounds like styrofoam rubbing together. I just cannot figure out a box call. But I love to have both a slate and a diaphragm with me, just because I'm the overthinker, and I think, well, I know what the turkey's thinking, and if the turkey were to do this, then he's going to think that I'm this. I don't know. I think too much into it, but I would say a diaphragm call, in my opinion, is probably the best call. And the only reason I say that is because it does the same calls as the other ones, but especially if you are sitting in the woods, no ground blind, you can keep that in your mouth behind your face mask, you know, just put it in when you need it and slide it in place with your tongue. If you got one coming in that's just kind of looking around, you can hit him with a little couple, you know, quick little cuts.
Yeah.
And you don't have to move at all. That's what I love the most about the diaphragm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But then again, there's a good chance I don't go out and buy one this year. I've went out and I've tried to, even on elk call, it's kind of a similar call, right?
Right. Yep.
I go out and practice with my diaphragm and I absolutely suck at it. And to the point where, you know, it's after supper, I clean the kitchen up and whip out the elk call and just, you know, try to get those cow noises coming in. And my wife is like, that has got to stop. You cannot do that anymore in the house. So I just go with my little blower thingy and there you go. So, all right. So we've talked about weather a little bit as far as scouting is concerned. Have you noticed that there is a specific day or weather style that gets the birds more fired up, gets the birds more aggressive than, you know, another day?
Believe it or not, I have had my best luck on rainy days. And it's hard to hunt on a rainy day, because especially if you're in a ground blind, because if they're further off and you're trying to listen, I don't know if you've ever heard rain inside a ground blind,
oh, yeah.
But it is horrific. It's just sprinkling outside and it sounds like a thunderstorm. It's just beating down.
Yeah.
But I've had them come up to the blind. I've had them call them in stuff during torrential downpours. And they just, sometimes they just don't care. But on the lighter end, before or after, I would say a nice storm that passes through, that's the best luck I've ever had. Yeah, just like fishing, you know, just before it rains. I love getting out turkey hunting just before a storm's rolling in.
Yeah. So there's a, you know, every time you lead a sentence with, you know, I heard from an old timer once, right? You can probably just disregard everything that comes out of my mouth after that point. But when someone told me one time, well, you want to find turkeys, just go out and scout for them in the rain. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Well, anyway, it's like 2 years ago. It was raining the day before season opener, and I had to go put this ground blind out because my wife was coming with me, and I didn't want to do it in the dark the next day. And sure enough, I'm driving around, and the fields, you know, all the way from my house to the farm are loaded with strutters while it's, you know, raining out. So, so what I what I've heard is that they don't like all the sound that the timber makes when it's raining. So they like to go out into the wide open spaces where it's less, it's not as noisy.
I've heard that as well as, worms are on their diet, and as well as, they even eat small lizards and whatnot. And they say that the moisture brings out anything that lives in the ground.
Cause it's flooded. Yeah.
And it floods out the underground, grubs and worms and even small lizards will come to the surface, like newts and stuff.
Yeah.
And they eat it all. Baby snakes, I had no idea about that, but I was doing some research for an article on, you know, their food patterns. And they said, you know, the rain brings things like that to the surface as well. So it's, I definitely could see a combination of it. And like I said, you know, I've had great, great luck on rainy days.
Yeah, that makes sense. That now when you say on rainy days, in the timber or out of the timber?
Out of the timber only.
Yeah.
I would say 80% of the time I hunt out of the timber, field edges, grass lines, you know, where they meet a field, the edge of the timber. A lot of times you'll have a strip or a small pasture of grass next to a corner bean field. That's where I have the best luck.
Yeah.
In the timber, I don't know if I've ever seen a turkey in the timber during rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Something to think about, right? It's it's one of those things where you don't really know the answer to it, and you have to you know, think back to all your experiences, and you're like, "You know what? As a matter of fact, I don't know if I've ever seen a turkey or a deer or whatever do that." So, all right. So, in that rainy conditions, were they responding at all, or were they quiet coming in?
On your clear days, they are more active in hitting calls back and forth. Rainier days, I've noticed they are much quieter, but they do respond well to your calls. And that's where that patience comes in of, I have my phone out or my watch on, and if they're not responding, especially like on rainy days, I wait 15 to 25 minutes because they could be right around the corner.
Yeah.
They don't answer you much in the rain for some reason. I don't know what would cause that, but they come into the calls, you know, which doesn't make sense. If they're not calling and you're calling, they would think you're fake, but
yeah,
that's where it gets me into it, where I think too far into it. And then I'm trying to find theories and I just not think.
Like you're some kind of biologist, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, I know
either
everything
that or
there
I'm
is.
A turkey.
Yeah. Well, don't admit to that. You know, here we are talking about how small their brains are. Don't admit to that, right?
Yeah, don't tell my wife.
Well, I'm sorry to say, but they already know, right? They already
right?
know.
Exactly.
All right. So, are there any other strategies, tactics, tips? Whether it is, you know, how to get a turkey close within shooting range, or gear, or anything that you like to share with us?
The only other things that I really do that are just kind of personal preferences. I don't know if anybody's ever thought about it, hunting from a tree stand. I've done it just to see if I could do it. That is hard. Turkeys look up a lot.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. It's a good thrill. It's kind of hard to do, but yeah, definitely not the easiest route to do it. So don't try that if you don't have to. The only other thing is I look at my camo patterns since turkeys can see so well. I don't care much for brand names. Like it has to be this. I love this one. I use a lot of mossy oak in the fall. It's got a darker tone to it.
Yeah.
And I use a lot of real tree during the spring because it's so bright and vivid. It matches my surroundings well. And since turkeys can see so well, keep that in mind, you know, watch your color schemes. I don't know how they see color wise, but pattern I know makes a huge difference to them, and make sure things are not loose. I did buy one of these like little bug screen face nets one time instead of using my normal Under Armour one, and it was windier and it was blowing around back and forth, and I didn't get busted, but I had a hen in front of me just staring at me every time that would the strings would blow on it. I'm like, I don't know. I think she can see that.
Yeah.
So,
man,
I don't know. Just
makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll
be weary of vision.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, man. When it comes to turkey hunting, I am a solid color guy. Where I wear a pair of solid brown, almost like a dicky, like a denim, thick dicky pants, and this big, heavy brown hooded sweatshirt for the most part.
Right.
And that's my, and sometimes I'll wear camo, right? Sometimes I don't, but man, it just basically it's what's at the top of the pile in my camo thing. But man, when I have seen some really good success with just solid colors and have them getting close too. So
I think it all depends on how you move.
Yeah.
Like if you can sit still, then it's not going to be a big deal. But I am a person, that's why I'm such a ground blind hunter.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot sit still. I move constantly. You know, if I have to sit still for some reason, I can't. Yeah. If I don't have to, like right now during this call, I don't need to move one bit. I've stayed in the same exact spot and have no problem doing it. But when I know I can't move, oh, I got an itch on my nose. Oh, I got a cramp in my leg. And I'm falling apart all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So that's why I stick to a camo pattern, just because I know if I do move, it will help conceal me a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a fact. That is a fact. Well, man, we've covered a lot today. Good luck, man. Good luck this upcoming season. You'll have to let me know how you do. Thanks for taking time out of your day to hop on and chat with us.
Absolutely. And good luck to you too.
And that brings us to the end of another Iowa Sportsman podcast, man. I cannot thank you enough for tuning in every week or whenever I put these out, man. Really appreciate this. If you're not already subscribed, go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. You can subscribe at iTunes. You can subscribe wherever you download your podcast and you know, subscribe. That way it comes right to you. Lots of great content that can be translated not only to Iowa, but to a variety of different Midwestern states. And right now is the time to be consuming this content and or getting outside, because there's not much else you can do right about now. So We're going to keep putting out the content during the quarantine time, and hopefully you guys are getting a little bit closer to the outdoors through this podcast. Thank you very much for your time, and be sure to check out the iowasportsman.com website and check out all of the blogs, all of the content that we're putting out there. Lots of great content. And don't forget about the Iowa Sportsman magazine as well, because there's also good content on there. So you got the podcast, you got the blog, and you got the magazine. And they've recently updated the Iowa Atlas. So be sure to check that out as well. And you can find all that information on iowasportsman.com. Until next week, get outside and enjoy Mother Nature, my friends. We'll be right back.